Hello and welcome to your All Out Cricket Podblast festive episode. Here I am in headquarters with none other than the editor, Phil Walker. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you. I'm all right. And we do have a guest here, Mr. Aaron Hariner.
Wow. Hello. Okay.
Sorry, Starlet.
Some of the more eagle-eared listeners may be wondering where the dulcet tones of Ross Armstrong, actor, and universally admired man, are. He's at work. Should we leave it at that?
Yeah.
So we've got Joe Harmon for number four. So the D'Artagnan of the group.
I've had the pleasure today of being on the two greatest cricket podcasts out there. Number one, Lords.
Yeah.
Home of Cricket Podcast. And sorry, not number one. Number two, Lords, Home of Cricket Podcast.
Yeah, well
number
corrected.
One, All Out Cricket Podcast.
Yep. Good. Good. Okay. Actually, I wasn't going to lead off with this, but this is segued absolutely perfectly. There is a third podcast on the market. I don't want to let people know, but there is. It's created by the Small Bunch. You may have heard of them. They're called ESPN. Quickinfo.com.
That's a weird name.
Have you heard of them?
No?
Never heard of them.
No. Quickinfo.
Yeah, quickinfo.com.
It's there for you.
So, so I listened to the last show. It's very good.
Yeah.
And there was a moment there, which actually I wanted to share with you guys, if that's all right. It's one of those moments. I'm going to play it now. You probably haven't heard it. And then afterwards we can just enjoy it together. How about that?
Fire away.
Lovely. All right, here we go.
Perfect world, I'd like him to have been captain. And up at the top of the order, I'm just not sure that five's the place for him. And it's not like he hasn't played a lot of games. I mean, he hasn't scored a lot of runs of late. He's scored more than Cook, mind. And they'll miss his fielding too, by the way. But I just think that they've tried him in every position, really, at this stage, and found him wanting, which is what your wife said about you.
Whoa! Wow. Yeah. What a risque podcast. Smutty podcast. That is pure filth.
I had to get it in there because I sort of promised that we would. Really enjoyed that. Just a completely unnecessary wife insult.
We've also finally got DeBell on the show as well. It's been a long time coming.
DeBell to, DeBell to Mark Butcher, to my listening.
Right.
But he seems to suggest today that it was Jono, what's his name,
the presenter? The Baron Barris, Harris Baron.
Talking of the Baron.
The Baron, that's
Is that your nickname?
It is my nickname, yeah.
Aaron, why are you called the Baron?
It was a nickname made up by Andrew Hodd at Sussex. And basically, it's different spelling of Baron. It was Baron as in, I've got no chat. And barren of any kind of chat whatsoever. I was pretty quiet when I played.
Harsh. Hence your best appearance on it.
Hence, I'll just sit here and just stay silent while you go on. But yeah, that's how it started. And then it kind of moved on to the Baron and here I am.
I was absolutely convinced that it was going to be simply, could it rhymed?
No. It's just I was so quiet and didn't say anything at the start.
Yeah.
So,
extraordinary. Well, it's a bit like this show. You were quite quiet at the start.
Yeah, but now I feel my way into it. Exactly.
It's like one of your innings.
Well,
you're moving into it now.
No. Well, it's one of my innings and it's just slow and painful.
Now, we've been through this, Aaron.
No, I know.
Not
no, I know, but I can't help myself. Okay. Self-deprecation is...
But what a joy, Alex. As a Surrey fan yourself, what a joy to have.
Now, I don't want to impose on you at all as a Surrey fan, but you probably know that my great-great-grandfather, Fred Smith, played once for the seconds.
Did he?
So, just, there's... And that's probably been covered in some of the team talks.
Yes, it has, yeah. Many.
So, that's
many.
Good. That's a relief for the Odell family generally. Lovely. Well, it's good. We might as well start talking about a left-hander who opens the innings, but for England.
Brilliant.
It's Alistair Cook.
It's a good segue.
So I've got a question about cricket, which I think you're ideally placed to answer. Sometimes players talk about finding it difficult to switch between formats. We know Cook is one of the great Test batsman.
Yeah.
And we know you went through a stage where he's a very good ODI batsman, but times went difficult. Do you buy that switching between formats thing? Is that a real challenge or is that something that you just can't comprehend?
No, it is a difficult thing to switch between formats. I think that the problem that Kirk has found is that when you don't build a momentum or build up a run of scores in this certain form, white ball cricket for him, then the vultures start circling and it's hard to get yourself out of that rut almost. And where he's had a decent test career and he's got that basis, that body of work in test cricket, and he can always fall back. You always see Cook, he's got runs before, he will come good. where in one day cricket he struggled a little bit, and I think that in that kind of makes that phenomenon worse, where it's harder to switch and it's harder to get going in the one day form,
yeah,
which he struggled to do. And,
I think most people were willing him to reverse the decline in Sri Lanka and the back end of the summer as well. But it got to the point where all rational arguments were null and void, and unfortunately, his position had become pretty much untenable. There have been criticisms of the ECB about the timing of it. I don't personally buy those. I think that there's never an ideal time to lose your captain, sack your captain, and to tell your captain, "I'm sorry, mate, but you're not cutting it anymore."
Allegations of Downton Shabby.
Yeah. I mean, again, the ECB, they could have dealt with it more sensitively. From a PR point of view, it was a bit mucky.
Yeah. Naughty, Hamilton called
it. The whole leaks culture that circles around the ECB, you know, Twitter knew, and, you know, the best part of 24 hours before there was actually a press release that finally dropped in people's inboxes. And so it was dealt with in a slightly grubby fashion. Morgan was unaware of it before we were even aware of it. I mean, this kind of has the stench of Ted Dexter era, you know, where they didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah.
So that wasn't great. But in terms of criticisms for doing it too near the World Cup and so on, I just don't buy that. I think it had to be done.
Yeah.
I think I respect their decision to have taken him to Sri Lanka and to have said, "All right, Cookie, here you go. Here's 6 or 7 games. Go and score some runs for us." What had happened... I think it's even more fundamental than the question of repertoire of shots and strike rates of 70, 75. I think it had actually, for the first time in Cook's career, I think the pressure had got to such an extent that it had really affected the fundamentals of his game. And it wasn't that he didn't have the ramp shot or he didn't have a kind of cut over, you know, backward point. It was that he was just missing straight balls because his head was so gone. And even in the final game, he was kind of laughing and smiling nervously, and I don't really see him do that generally. He's generally very cool and calm, and just seeing that, and he got a skittish 20-odd before missing another straight ball, and I kind of thought, my God, mate, your head's gone here.
Yeah.
So, right decision.
It's Joe. Also who else England have got, and that's the thing. I don't take any pleasure in seeing Cook be sacked or told his ODI career is over, but the fact is, I'm... feel like it's a positive move for the England cricket team, and actually not just the one day team. I think Cook having a break now, I'm sure he doesn't feel like this right now, but massive year of Test cricket to come.
I always West enjoy Indies. That though, don't you? Then when they say, "Oh, he'll go away to his farm," and he
does always play a key
Jonathan
role.
Agnew wrote in his column, he doesn't read much. I thought, what, because he can't. He doesn't read much. He's probably got no mobile phone signal.
I was talking about the farm thing earlier. I mean, there's this assumption like this is this haven of wonder. I mean, it might be bloody miserable on
it's
the farm.
It's hard work on the farm.
Bleak, barren, you know. Yeah, just must be horrible over there.
But anyway, as you say, he's gone back to the farm, and he's going to come back, and we've got a hell of a lot of test matches.
Much test cricket next year. Yeah. You've got West Indies, you've got the Ashes, you've got Pakistan and South Africa.
Five series in a year, and I think it's 17 or 18 test matches.
My only thing about thinking about this, and you mentioned about the ECB, will that trust still be there with him, even in Test cricket?
It's a big question.
Having been treated like I haven't actually sat down and analysed the politics of it, but having seen him, you know, this is the way he's been treated, I don't know how that will that trust be built up again over the course of it, because it's a massive series.
Big question.
And this Ashes is, you know, something that the England team will be working towards and be looking to...
I think again, what the media decide to be poor form and what these individuals feel to be poor form could well be two different things. And Cook himself may feel, as a pragmatist who, hands on heart, must recognise, I haven't scored a run in 22 games and no 103 years. You'd hope that he would kind of think, okay, well, you know, I'm pissed off that you've made this call, but I respect it. And, you know, the job of being Test captain is such a privilege anyway. I trust that everyone's pulling in the right direction, and so therefore you hope that things will be all right. But you're right. I mean, it will threaten what's already quite a precarious setup anyway in the post-Peterson era. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out. And again, if the pressure was ramped up over last summer in Test cricket for Cook, I mean, he made a 90, that was it. Then you imagine what it's like if they go to the West Indies in April, he bums out over 2 or 3 Test matches and...
And the question
and then you imagine, I mean, suddenly he's looking at potentially, you know, the end of a career.
Can I ask you for the New Zealand perspective on Cook sacking? Come on, Joe. What's the rest of the world going to be thinking about Cook being sacked?
Well, I've obviously canvassed the opinion of my aunties, uncles, cousins, grandparents.
Good.
And they're shocked.
Good. They're on the farm as well.
I've got plenty of farm work to be done. So.
Do you think the rest of the world is looking at it going... I mean, you know, people are talking about... Hayden said the other day that it was crazy that KP wasn't being sacked. You haven't got Hayden going, Zach Cook, are you mad? Is there a single international player that's sort of gone, hello, that's completely bonkers?
Well, it's not. It's by the end, everyone thought his time would come to a close. I think... apart from him, possibly. But that stubbornness, that's why someone had to take the decision out of his hand.
I think that if you're a player, you're always going to think you can do it.
Yeah, and I don't blame him.
Yeah, otherwise, you wouldn't be an international cricketer.
No, and you've got a lot of people on Twitter. Very angry, vitriolic people on Twitter that he hasn't stepped aside. And he's got to back himself. That's the whole point.
I think there's a kind of magnificence to him having not stepped aside. You know, I mean, to be that sure, even if there are doubts in the back of your mind, but to be that sure that you're still the right man for the job, you know, there's a kind of spectacular stubbornness and pig-headedness there. It's admirable, really. I thought that if he didn't get runs in Sri Lanka, he would no longer be captain. And I said that at the start of the series, but I thought that he would say, all right, listen, let's do a mutual consent thing. You know, you probably don't want me and I probably shouldn't do it. But no, none of that. I mean, he was, I'm doing this, and you've got to drag me out the back door.
And was gutted when they did it.
Yeah, and again, leak culture, I don't know where these quotes came through, you know, he didn't give an interview to a newspaper or anything like that.
There's a lot of
leaks going on. Yeah, but this is the nature of it. And so your question, Aaron, your question about what the land looks like post this is interesting because, you know, everyone has their own mouthpieces, you know, and even Cookie's got his own.
I don't think he can have too many complaints. I mean, the ECB have really backed him and they've supported him all the way. I think in this case, there was a grubby leak a few hours before it should have happened, but I don't think he can have too many complaints or will have too many complaints with the decision itself.
That's fair enough. I think, as Phil said, the position became untenable, but I think the England group need to figure out, is this the 15, 16 players that we're going forward with? And then give them, you know, a period of 2 years. If that's what we're going to do, to move forward with those guys, and instead of chopping, because I feel like in one day cricket changed so much, and there's new personnel every so often, doing different roles and not having set roles, that the performance isn't going to be consistent. You want that core group of guys who are going to be in the side, who are going to be your bankers, and they're the ones who move the team forward. And you've got the people who come in and out. A little bit through injury, through whatever, but I feel like there shouldn't be an overturning. You know, if we perform poorly at this World Cup, does that mean, like, you know, the 12 of the guys of this squad and we're going to change it all again?
Well, I think it always happens, and this time it really shouldn't, because there isn't that expectation. And it should be seen as a developing moment. I'm wondering, Aaron, with this as well, because there's always a feeling amongst a lot of county cricket fans that the England team is almost a closed shop, or at least that some players have to have significantly better performances get into the England side. Is that the feeling? So someone like James Taylor would be a good example of, there are so many people out there who think he should have been in the side a long time ago.
Well, James Taylor has, you know, done exceptionally well, having had the door closed on him a few times.
Yeah.
And to keep saying, you know, I'm going to go on the England line. come on. I'm not sizes here. Because to keep coming back and saying, look, I'm going to go on the line, stuff about myself, I'm going to play, I'm going to score runs. And he's done well every time. And get back into that side and do well and prove everyone wrong is a great effort. I don't think it's a closed shop. I think, you know, with people like someone like Jason, who's in that 30-man, that area, if you perform well, like Sam Billings, someone again that I spent
Jason
time
Roy.
With. Yeah, Jason yeah. Roy, sorry, I was still on that. And Sam Billings, who I've spent a little bit of time with as well. You know, the shop door isn't that closed. If you perform well and you take on and you do something that's, you know, and go in the T20 blast and prove in front of everyone that you can play, that the selectors are always open for that X factor. So, but the guys who are going to make up the core group are going to be the guys who perform week in, week out, and they go on those programs, the England Lions stuff, and do well there. So I don't think people feel like it's a closed shop. No, there are going to be people who are hard done by. Don't get me wrong. I mean, someone like just think top of my head, Michael Carberry may feel like he's hard done by, but I don't think people feel like it's a close shot. Mm. Well, I don't anyway. Mm.
Well, here we go. We come to the end of the Cook segment. We've discussed it now for quite a long time. Cook,
all good stuff.
Trots right? off to his farm in the style of sort of John Proctor in The Crucible.
Yeah, nice.
A sort of martyr.
I played John Proctor in my A level.
Is there anybody that did A level that didn't play John Proctor? I just wonder. Is that right? No. Oh, we've got a couple of non-John Proctors here. No, extraordinary.
It's an even split.
Wow, 2-2. 50% John
Proctor.
You're
insinuating I didn't play John Proctor there, Alex. I clearly did play John Proctor.
You would have played him, and you would have played him really well.
He's belittling your achievement, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. Oh, we're going to do a quiz question. Yeah. Seamless.
We're missing Ross.
Really missing you, Ross.
That was awful.
Tonto without the Lone Ranger. That's for you. Okay, quiz question. Quiz question, lads. What connects you, Aaron, to Angelina Jolie? What connects Aaron to Angelina Jolie?
They both did work experience at All Out Cricket in round circa 2007.
That's a nonsense and you know it, Phil.
Angelina Jolie was England netball. She was on the England netball side.
Shall I let that one brew over the course of the episode? We can come back to it a couple of times.
I've got one for you then, as we're here, which I read earlier, and didn't have a clue for the answer. Which is one for you?
Do you know the answer now, though? Shut up. Don't do it.
Yeah, I do now.
No, okay, fine.
England player who made a debut 100 in 2014.
Sam Robson?
No. Michael Lum?
Yeah, Michael Lum, yeah. Oh. Completely. Oh. A little ODI effort in the Indies. Well done, Michael.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it.
Dropped.
That's it.
No, it was dropping quite quickly because he was doing slightly better than the ones who were already there. It was the pre-T20.
And because he had, like,
so
grandkids.
T20 size.
He was ancient.
Yeah.
Michael
Lum. Yeah.
He was, yeah. He is, isn't he? It's very muscular, though.
Anyway, Michael Lum is not in the 15th for the World Cup.
He's not. No, let's talk about the 15th for the World Cup and let the quiz question just gestate in the background like in a Petri dish. It's not
Jolie
right.
And Harriner. Jolie and Harriner. Yeah, all right, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
What I would say about the squad, I woke up Saturday morning, had a look at the squad again, and thought, do you know what? That's a really good squad. And I got really excited. And then I did some
eternal
tweets.
Optimism.
Then
it's just
then
exhausting.
I did some tweets. Yeah. That's also how unusual
it was. The Stokes wasn't in it.
I was not surprised. I was a bit disappointed, but not surprised. Stokes was your 15 and a half man, you know. He would have been in a 16 and he would have been a useful player within that. The problem is he stunk the place out in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, that's right, isn't he?
And there's no escaping that.
He proper stunk.
Cook gave him a shot. He kept throwing him the ball.
I wish he hadn't thrown him the ball. Yeah. Just let him graze in the outfield and try and.
Every England fan wants to inform Stokes on their side, but the fact is,
he's such a good cricketer.
Apart from Alex, he's not interested.
Not interested in Stokes. More of a Wokes man.
Complete red herring. And I'm not a Wokes man, but that Stokes thing, red herring.
Really?
That 100 in Perth.
He keeps saying this, you know. It's
red herring.
If I just repeat it enough times, it'll become true.
Yeah, true, yeah.
Can I talk about another forgotten man? Not forgotten very long ago, but then instantly forgotten, because there's a lot of talk about Azal Rashid before this tour.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a word. World Cup squad comes, goes. He was never given a chance.
He wasn't, was he? But then Moen and Treadwell both bowled
hardly
enough in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
A bit better than that, actually. And you don't need more than two spinners in your squads for Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
So
yeah, next.
What about Gary Balance, recalled? What do you think of that?
I think that... I don't think he's going to make the 11, but I think that if a batter gets injured, he's shown in domestic county cricket... That
is he dangerous?
Yeah, he's dynamic.
Have you got Bell or Taylor at three?
Let me go through... Do you want me to go through my
11? Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. That's a great idea.
Can I do mine first while you think? Or are you already there with yours?
You go.
All right. I've changed mine. Hales, for me, unless he gets runs in the triangulars, is on the duty just yet. But so I'm going to go with Bell to open up. Bell to open with Moen. Taylor at three. He's tiny, isn't he? But he's really good.
Yeah.
Root, Ravi, Morgan. Maybe swapping those two around might be Morgan five.
Yep.
Especially now he's skipper. Yeah. Obviously, Butler keeping, and then Broad.
Anderson I'm gonna,
yeah, Anderson at Broad. Jack and Treadwell at 10. Unless it's just a quick pitch and then Finn comes in at 10 or 11. And at the moment, I'm leaning towards Jordan ahead of Wokes. I know Wokes bowled well in Sri Lanka. But I'm thinking out there, again, it's conditions based, but I'm thinking out there, quick pitches, brilliant fielder, strong hitter, lower order. I'd just about give Jordan the nod. Good slipper as well.
Has Jordan hit any runs since that Barbados ODI?
No, but he hasn't really been in a pressure situation where he's come in when England basically the game is gone.
Because he's batting at 9 or 10.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think worrying about who bats 9 and 10 in an ODI side
doesn't work.
My fear for Wokes, who I like a lot, is that out there with so little lateral movement after the first 10 overs or so, out there in Australia, he's.
But he has famously put on a yard,
yeah. And you know, you were obviously in a far better position because you would have faced these lads.
Yeah, I think. I haven't faced him since he's put on the yard, but like when I played some rebel cricket, which is again different, but he was challenging because he swung both ways and nipped it about.
Consistently swung.
And consistently swung it.
He's got good action. Good repeatable action, and now
he's obviously put on a bit more on his frame and he's bowling yard quicker. I would put Hazelton at the top. I think he's played Big Bash cricket. He knows about Australian conditions.
Instead of Bell.
And I would actually open with both. I think the guy, who was I going to go with? I think I was going to go with Moen at 3, Taylor at 4, Root Morgan.
So you're dropping Ravi?
I think I'm going to drop Ravi.
Okay.
Butler 7. Did I say that? Yeah, Butler 7.
Yeah.
No, I think I'm dropping Treadwell. Because I think Root, out in Australia, I think Root can bowl your part-time spinner. Ravi basically bowls spin. You've got Moen. With those three, I think you're getting out of jail. I think Trewell's my man if it is going to spin, and maybe Ravi misses out then. But I think that I would go batting heavy.
Yeah.
And then your three seamers, your Finn, Anderson, Broad.
And this is the thing, we're picking an 11 that spans two countries and a whole tournament. Yeah. So it doesn't quite fit. But I think I want Hales up top. And Hales has got a big bash to really make an impact.
Yeah, exactly. And that's
Sri Lanka was never going to be, well, it could have been, but it wasn't the great series for him, was it? And they'd said before they had a bit of concerns about how he played spin.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be so much of a problem in Australia and New Zealand.
He had a good big bash in last year.
He did. I have one or two reservations about Hales against top class bowlers. I have a massive soft spot for Bell, and Bell is a boundary.
Well, I think I'd go with Bell and, at the top as well, definitely.
And Bell out in Australia, for me, he's an absolute stick on.
Yeah.
And it's a tough one on Hales, but for me, Bell has to make that cut.
I just think
for me, it's between Hales and Taylor, personally.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd probably go Taylor. I think the reason why I say Hales is out in Australia, where this is traditional, and I don't know where every ground, and we could turn up to Hobart and be a green seamer. But the wickets are generally good. Those two new balls early on will probably be easier to bat against than, say, here.
Yeah.
And I think you need to get onto, obviously, as you said, a good start. And and Hales provides that. And I think Bell, you're right. I think he's one of those guys who can bat anywhere and should be a cornerstone.
The overall feeling, though, is that this is exciting times.
Yeah.
Now, I've kind of said slightly tongue-in-cheek that, they're going to go in and win the thing. I think they're going to do all right out there. I genuinely do.
Well, they don't have to do very much to make the semis, do they? It's almost impossible not to make the quarters. So they've got to win one game, probably against South Africa, to make the semis. And then there'll be 1990 England World Cup in Italy all over again. Everyone will be delighted with the whole situation. England,
Dickensian, curmudgeonly character. But you must be mildly excited about the option.
I'm overwhelmingly sceptical because all the players that everyone's screaming about getting in, and I understand why they are screaming to get them in because the people they're replacing were so dull to watch. But, get rid of Bell and Trott and Cook and you get three exciting players and then they just all get bugger all. I mean,
smashing a century.
At the beginning of the series, but you cannot get all of them firing at the same time sufficient to win a series. It's just not happening. And that is inexperience. That's not lack of ability. It's that team should have been playing together and winning together and learning together for a decent period of time, not just beforehand. England are going to do badly in this World Cup because they're up against really hardened, grooved, good sides who know how to win games.
They need Morgan in form at 5, and he's a massive one because he's... In some ways, we haven't actually talked about him as being the new captain, in some ways it's a brave call. He's got a worse record than Cook over the last year, if you take an average as the best indicator. But I think whilst pretty much all England fans didn't want Cook in the side, they would all still have Morgan there, because when he comes good, he's their most likely match winner. And he still had the odd innings in there. He hit a 60, didn't he? Or a 50 in the Sri Lanka series.
Yeah, 40 ball 60.
T20 at the end of the summer. He's obviously not lost it. And he's got a brilliant record as captain. I think he averages 70 as captain. Yeah. So this might be, all round, it might be the kind of thing that sparks him into life. And I think he's the game changer. You've got Butler there, fair enough, you can finish in innings. But you need someone in there to take you from this solid start we've talked about to a potentially big, big score.
I would say in the last 8 months, you've had the emergence of Josh Butler, who's capable of hitting 60 ball hundreds.
And Joe Root.
And Joe Root, who probably averages 50-odd plus over the last dozen or so ODIs.
Yeah.
And Moeen Ali's emerged as a bowler who can trap Sangakkara on the back leg with a sharply spinning off break and hit a 70 ball 100, right? So in the last 8 months, you've seen three players emerge. Now, okay, there is a kind of a stench around the team that is only going to be blown away by consistent victories. But I look at it, and I'm not given to, you know, wild optimism, as you well know, but I look at it and I'm excited by that team. I genuinely am.
Well, I'm excited in the same way.
I think they're a fast bowler short. I think they're a fast bowler short massively. And, you know, they're probably a match-winning spinner short if we're being absolutely picky, but I think there's a lot of interest.
How many sides have a match-winning one-day spinner?
For sure.
I just think that I'm looking...
One or two do.
I'm looking at Sterling, Welbeck, you know, Rooney and Rooney and Barkley. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... It's full of promise. That's great. You go out there, you might play quite excitingly. You're going to eventually lose the moment you come up against Sri Lanka, India, South Africa, or Australia.
Yeah. All right, I would just add, just to finish off here, that, you know, a year and a bit ago, with a team that probably not quite as good as this one, for me anyway, certainly not as exciting, they were within a top-edge hook shot of winning the Champions
Trophy. Yeah, I knew Champions Trophy was coming.
You know, but why shouldn't it? I mean, that's the last 50-over World Tournament.
Yeah.
I don't think there's other sides. There aren't just sides that demolish every team in one-day cricket.
No.
I appreciate it. It's a bit of a stretch to see them go and win the whole tournament. But I genuinely think you can beat any sides. And for it not to have to be reliant completely on one person producing something incredible.
I think we all agree. I've said that we all agree, and therefore it is. I say that we all agree that they can beat anyone on their day. Yeah,
but I think it's how many days there are that we agree on.
But my question for you is, what connects Aaron and Angelina Jolie?
Landmines.
Come on, can I give you a clue?
Yeah, because I haven't got one.
What school did you go to?
Tiffin.
Okay. All right. That's the
Johnny
clue.
Johnny Lee Miller.
Married to
Angelina Jolie.
That was underwhelming, wasn't it?
No, that's good.
So, okay, here we go. Do you know, was there a parody Twitter account of you?
Yes, there was.
Called Not Aaron Haranath?
Yes.
In 2012?
In 2012, yeah.
Was it the same time as the KP Twitter?
Yeah.
Mine preceded it, so I must have
really?
Said
you were ahead
yeah,
of KP,
I, you know, I was ahead of the curve.
That's right. And would you describe yourself the same as KP at the time? Just got underwhelmed. Was your own teammate?
I was emotionally wrecked. No.
It didn't cut you to the core.
No, it didn't. No, because I actually knew who did it.
A little pocket of sort of Surrey second team players in the corner.
It was actually Gary Wilson right next to me saying, "I'm actually going to do this parody account because you're 10%."
Right, so you didn't know who it was.
Gary Wilson couldn't even be bothered to put an image up.
No, he couldn't.
He didn't really go for it.
It didn't last that long, did it?
Five tweets and that was it.
Yeah.
Hey, lots of news. Let's have a short break.
Yeah, go.
And then get on to it. Well, welcome back. A little bit of the blues for you. Okay, so we are going to play a game that I came up with today. It's called Partridge versus Johnson. Christmas game for you all. All right, and this is to commemorate at Christmas the release in Australia of Mitchell Johnson's DVD, Mitchell Johnson : Bouncing Back. And Bouncing Back also happens to be the name of Alan Partridge's autobiography, which no doubt Johnson knew. So I'm going to read you a couple of quotes. All right.
Okay. Have you watched the whole DVD and written down the quotes that you found funniest?
I'm just going to read a couple of quotes, and I just want you to tell me Partridge or Johnson. That's all it is.
Go for it.
Okay. All right. Here we go. And I'm not going to do an accent because that would give it away. Okay. I was clinically fed up for 2 years. Didn't work. But the point is, I bounced back. People bounce back. Rolf Harris, Dennis Hopper. There are others. I'm one of them.
This is not Partridge, this is an extraordinary.
So, Johnson or Partridge?
I think we're going Partridge for that one. I really want it to be Johnson.
Right, this is the second quote, because there's one of each, so wait till you hear the second one. I learnt from that to really focus on myself, needing to learn how to block things out. At that stage, I didn't know how to do it, so it was a really good learning experience that made me grow as a person. Okay, Johnson or Partridge?
That's Mitchie.
It was Johnson.
Oh, this game is not nearly as difficult as I anticipated.
It's when you throw in Rolf Harris.
Yeah, Rolf Harris.
Maybe if I'd read the next quote. I now have the third best slot on Radio Norwich. I do a military-based quiz show for cable TV called Skirmish, and I've got a girlfriend.
Yeah, so that was
Mitchell Johnson. Lovely. So that was Johnson versus Partridge. Well done him for bringing it up. Australia playing India at the moment in test matches. There seems to be a good test match. It's quite interesting. The only thing I want to talk about, practice pitches, Brisbane, last day. Did you hear about the moaning?
Oh, there was a bit hoo-ha, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Because Dwan got hit.
Dwan got hit, and the Nets couldn't back to bat. Then he did come out and bat, and actually did a lot better than he'd ever done in about 2 years.
Because he's away from the new ball. It's better that he doesn't face the new ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of kind of hot air about that, really.
What do we think of Steve Smith? Because he's still, in my mind, the Steve Smith of the Ashes victory in 2009. He's still... I can't believe that Steve Smith
is Australian.
Captain of Australia.
He's an amazing story, isn't it? But yeah. He's a serious player.
Yeah.
Have you played against him?
I've played with him, and I've played against him. And also, I saw him last year, actually, funnily enough. And he was with the Sydney Sixers. And he was doing a bit of training and caught up. And to think that he is now Australian captain, the sequence of events that have happened to make that happen is quite unbelievable.
What makes him such a good player?
I think he's always looking to score and punish opposition. Yeah. He's got, obviously, he's naturally talented, but then he gets that level, everyone is. But
what's he done there?
God, discipline is lax, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Christmas. Red's
right. Yeah, exactly. Sorry, Aaron.
But I think he looks to score a lot of the time and put pressure back on the opposition.
He hits good balls.
And he slightly unorthodox, so people can't get away with bowling the normal traditional length at him. And he keeps getting it away. Mm. Well, I mean, the thing is, though, he hasn't, at the moment, his career has gone really at that upward trajectory. So,
did you play with him in Australia?
No. When he came to play here, he played for Surrey second team. We were having a look at him, basically.
I see.
And he came over here and he wanted to play a bit of second team cricket. We had a look at him and we were really keen on him. But obviously, his heart was wanting to play for Australia, which is fair play and good on him. And he ended up being Australian captain.
Yeah. What is it about him? Because even when he didn't have a particularly good record, lots of people were saying he'll be a future captain of Australia.
I didn't know that hype was surrounding him. All I knew is that when he became over as a leg spinner predominantly, he's a bloody good leg spinner. Sorry, I don't even know.
That's absolutely allowed.
General swear words are fine.
Yeah.
No F's and no C's. No,
okay, good. But then he's made himself. I mean, he was a talented ball striker, but like almost like that kind of KP thing, made himself into a very, very good batsman to the extent where he's now, you know, switched those roles completely. I didn't know about the hype of him being, you know, future captain. But he's as I said before, he's one of those people that you have in the middle order, and there's plenty around the world where they hit. You can't bowl in a certain area, a certain channel to him, because he will put you away. He'll either pull off length, or he'll punch. You know, there's corridor balls that you talk about. He'll punch and put those way through the offside for four. So
you also have to love Australia's cricketing culture and its approach to their players. I mean, they've identified this kid, peroxide blonde, bowls kind of ragged leggies, peculiar, unorthodox way of approaching. He's got a back lift around the back of his head.
Yeah.
And at 25, he's their national captain. You know, you have to love that kind of approach.
And then steps up and does well.
Yeah.
Because he's ready for it.
Yeah.
And they could so easily have just gone the Haddon route, couldn't they? And said, well, we'll see with Clark. He might be back in a couple of tests.
But it must help that Haddon can't buy a run.
Yeah.
I think also with Australian cricket as well, they also can go back to a guy like Chris Rogers and Mike Hussey, who dominate cricket. And then if they say, right, fair enough, you may not have been earmarked, in the past, but we're happy to hold our hands up and say, look, you can open the batting for Australia. was Mike Hussey and Chris Rogers have done.
What more runs in the 21st century than any other man, Chris Rogers?
Has he?
Mm. Wow, great stat.
Thanks, mate.
Introduction of a stat so late in the day. Attack. It's like Liverpool's winner last night.
Can you credit that one?
No, it's a Benedict
of Skies.
All right,
well,
you know,
it's a stat, isn't it? He didn't create.
He
might have
revealed it.
Yeah. Oh dear. So, anyway, controversy. We talked about Australian players that you played with. Mm. I'm looking at a photo here from my Twitter feed that I actually put up here on the 6th of May 2013. I've enjoyed it so much that it's been sitting here. It's a lads' night out in Guildford with the Surrey cricket team.
Yeah.
Few bandits around in Guildford tonight.
Picking it up.
Just for the benefit, because it's radio. For the benefit, John Lewis there, Jay Dernbach. And then at the front, the man himself, Ricky Ponting. Ricky Ponting in a large Mexican hat.
I know what night this was. I didn't actually go. I wasn't feeling too great. They basically...
Couldn't be bothered.
Is that the Baron thing? Nah, yeah. Sitting on my own, just like watching Question Time. The big man, the great man, Ricky Ponting.
Well, that's when that was not just have a look at this photo. Yeah.
It was a photo. Do you want to name them
Name the people. Yeah. No, it was more reflections on Ricky. Should we call this segment
Reflections on Ricky?
Yes, it is nice. Thanks, Phil. So, Ricky Ponting, you met Steve Smith, obviously.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of connection you can draw between the two of them? Is there an attitude? Is it just the fact that their eyes are quite close together and quite squinty?
My mum's pointing this. Yeah. All the best players are cross-eyed.
All the best Australian captains, very, very small eyes.
I've not noticed that.
Flinty-eyed, small-eyed. Anyway, Ricky Ponting.
I think they're different characters.
Has he got a bit of hairy growth, Ricky P, going on? Because it was quite fulsome, like, his hair, I thought, when I saw him on TV the other day. I always thought he was thinning. Like,
really?
You don't know any insights?
No, I can't give you... I couldn't give you any of that.
The thing is,
I don't notice. I don't really notice.
Get him on. Yeah. He just hasn't done his research.
I'm on Advanced Hair Studio.
So you're kind of suggesting this isn't important?
I was about to go to his bag, and you want me to know if he's...
There's all kinds of insights, you know. We could have asked you about batting technique. Yeah. We're going to ask you about the role of experience.
Similarities with Steve Smith. Whether their eyes are too close together or if they've been to Advanced Hair Studios.
That's right. Yeah.
This is the podcast that gives you
You'll
that.
You'll be there one day, Aaron.
Yeah. That's correct. How good is Ricky Ponting? Is he the kind of guy that you watch Ricky in the nets and you're like, holy shit, Ricky, you're really actually the best player I've ever seen in my entire life.
So basically, so we were playing, the first game he played was, I think it may have been Derby.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was Derby?
Okay, right. So, and we were just sitting there, and he just played this front foot pull off length, and he just thought, oh my God, this guy is the real deal. And the whole time he stayed, I got a chance to spend a fair bit of time with him, and he was just brilliant, like really humble. No, because as I've said this to a few people, I didn't, as a person, as someone who's watching cricket on TV after 2005 or whatever, I didn't think he wasn't my favourite cricketer. I just didn't, you know, kind of that bullish Australian, then I didn't really quite like that. Mm. But having met him and got to know him and the fact that he's so giving with his time and everything, and also being a ridiculous player, was brilliant, and he's just impactful for the whole
Is he club. So ridiculously good that he's got almost KP syndrome? KP's reported as being unable to basically coach people because it's so easy for him.
No, he's not one of those. He will coach you. Like, he basically, there was one session we were doing, a session at Dulwich College, and he literally threw to everyone in our side, like one through the 11 that were playing, one through 10. He just threw at them, was, you know, talking to them about batting, whatever. So he loves cricket, like, loves it. Talking about it, the history of the game, what's going on currently. He knows stats from other parts of the world, and, you know, he knows about all the players, basically. I think, going back to our comparisons between Steve and Ricky, I think the talent, the batting talent, is probably as far as it goes, really. I think from what I know and what I've met of them, different characters. I think Ricky, when he gets out there, obviously, as you see on TV, he's got that intense personality, and he's, you know, lead by doing. Where I think Steve's a little bit more relaxed, and that's fine. Clark seems to be that kind of captain as well, a little bit more relaxed. I mean, you can lead different ways, but Ricky was like, I'm going to do it this way, and you're going to follow me. because I'm going to be, you know, 290 not out, and I'm taking on their best bowlers. I'm going to get hit in the face, and I'll still get 150.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
It's, and one last mention of Clark as well. You know, we don't need to touch on the events around Adelaide and so on, but as a cricket fan over here, I felt closer to Australian cricket than I've ever felt before, really, and I felt a kind of peculiar connection with it, as filtered through Clark. And I've always had a kind of a begrudging love for them. You know, I grew up in the 90s, but that period was quite, obviously enormously powerful and poignant as well. But for Australia to deliver that event and that occasion and that test match, and India to play their part as well, Kohli's 140 on the final day, I watched a lot of that phenomenal innings. After the horrors of what took place beforehand, that was actually quite a powerful invocation for cricket, really, and you know, a validation for everything that we kind of hold dear, really. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Isn't that lovely? All right, well, we're getting towards the end of the podcast. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pause it quickly, and then we'll probably have some smooth jazz just to see us out. And we can talk over the smooth jazz.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Ooh, 44 minutes and 57 seconds, 58 seconds, 59 seconds, 45 minutes. Listeners, here we are at the end of another Merry Christmas Pod Blast.
A bit of special with the great man.
That's right, very special. And we're going to spend the last few moments that we can spend together asking you just a couple of questions about Surrey Cricket Club, very dear to my heart.
Not to mine.
So, who would you say on the Surrey cricket team is the strongest person in the team?
The strongest man.
Well, strongest man is on Channel 5 at the moment. Who could be on there?
Can you take a guess?
You can. Yeah. You can.
Got to be Matt Dunn, right?
It's Tremlett, isn't it?
Yes. It's Tremlett. Okay. He can play lock forward for a fair few rugby players.
Are you the leanest and therefore possibly the weakest?
I am. I wouldn't say I'm the weakest. No. I would be...
Who's the weakest?
Oh, good question. I think the lad.
What about
Ansari? He's strong.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a great walk, a great kind of open-toed walk.
See, again, you
brilliant.
Notice the male form.
Best walk.
A lot. Hair. Gait.
What else is there? I
don't know. Is any of
that's the male form, listeners. Yeah. Tune in 2015 for the latest All Out Cricket Pod Blast. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Tweet us.
Cheerio.
See ya.